Senate Environmental Natural Resource Committee to order Thursday, April 14th. Members, we have two bills. We have two bills before us today. First bill is Senator Hoffman, and I think she's here. Senator Hoffman, welcome to the committee. Senate File 855. You have some guests with you, I see.
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Hannan and Kudelka, is that correct? I'm sorry, not Kudelka, I don't think. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Today I'm offering Senate File 855. This bill modifies Minnesota Statutes 2010, Section 115B.12, Subdivision 8, which deals with title transfers within the landfill cleanup program. And what it does is allows transfers of property between the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and the city or county pertaining to the landfill cleanup program. And how this bill came about, and I'm going to have Mr. Hannan testify to this, the bill came about due to the tornado damage in Wadena and the need in Wadena County for the landfill boundaries to be expanded in order to accommodate all the debris from the tornado damage and the waste that was left behind. So with that, Mr. Chair, with your permission, I'd like to have Mr. Hannan kind of give a brief description of what they're up against and why this came about.
Mr. Hannan, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mike Hannan, and I'm the Solid Waste Administrator for Wadena, Otter Tail, and Todd Counties. As you all know, eastern Otter Tail and western Wadena County were severely impacted last June by a tornado that hit the area. We approached Senator Hoffman late last summer and began to talk about what we were going to do long term with that debris. And I won't take a lot of your time, but I would like to explain a little bit what we did after the tornado hit. A cooperative effort between Otter Tail County, Wadena County, the city of Wadena, and the Minnesota DOT, we identified a temporary debris management site on property owned by the city of Wadena. It used to be the old city airport. At that site, I think I would like to say we did a pretty good job of accepting tornado debris from the area, and what we did at the site is we sorted the debris, and right now we've got about 80,000 yards of concrete at the facility that we intend to recycle. We've got about 40 to 50,000 yards worth of scrap metal at the site that we intend to recycle. In fact, we just took bids this past week on the processing of those materials. We've got about another 10,000 yards of shingle debris that we're going to be recycling. Unfortunately, we've got about 80,000 yards of building materials out there, walls, ceilings, floors of buildings that we're going to be unable to recycle. And Wadena County has a very small demolition landfill. We typically take in about 6,000 cubic yards a year. And in this one process, we're going to take in that about 80,000 yards. There is some property to the west of the existing demo landfill, and I think if you have the map, it's highlighted in blue, that sits between a roadway and our existing demolition landfill. And there's some, you know, drainage issues in that area anyway, and meeting with MPCA staff, we began to develop this plan that would allow for the placement of the demo debris in that area, which would solve our problem of what we were going to do with the debris, as well as solve some issues that exist with surface water drainage and stuff in that area. So from there, we did approach Senator Hoffman and ask for her assistance. And I might point out also that there's an area to the north of the property that is highlighted in red on your maps. And we've got a very good working relationship through this tornado process with the MPCA. And in that area, we're not going to acquire ownership, but we would have an agreement with the MPCA, an easement, to allow placement of monitoring wells and future monitoring in that area. So with that, I'll just stop, and if the committee has questions, I'd be happy to answer them, or I'll turn it over to Senator Hoffman.
Committee members, any questions? Can I ask, just for the point of interest of the committee, how is the cleanup 100% done? Are we still talking about some more? Do you know over in Wadena?
Mr. Chairman, the cleanup is not 100% done. The operation of the debris management site is closed, and so any of the waste that will be brought to the demo landfill in the future will go directly to the landfill, not be added to the stuff that's at the temporary debris management site. But there's a lot of homes in town that, you know, didn't get cleaned up last fall. They'll probably do them this spring, and so there's still a lot of work yet to go.
Thank you. No further questions, Senator? Senator Higgins.
Is she ready for?
Did you have somebody else to testify? I'm sorry.
I do, Mr. Chair. Okay, and I do want to say, just as a side note, that Wadena's come a long way in a year. I was there the night of the tornado, and I'm there a lot now, obviously, and it's amazing what the people of Wadena have been able to accomplish, so they should be very proud of themselves. Now I'd like to introduce Mr. Kadelka from the MPCA, and he's going to talk about the bill. Is that how I say your name?
No, it's Jeff Willis.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You and I are both striking out today. Yeah. I'm reading off of here. I know Mr. Kadelka, and I looked at
him. Well, no, I'm not him.
This will teach you to pay more attention.
I think he is here, though.
Yes, he is.
Shame on you.
So welcome to the committee. Please state your name, please.
Thank you. My name is Jeff Lewis, and I actually manage the closed landfill program at the MPCA. We began work with Mike trying to make some changes to the boundaries of the area that was in our closed landfill program. As some of you may know, we've got about 112 sites that are in our program. We've got about 8,000 acres that we're responsible for. Only about 2,200 acres of that actually has garbage. When the properties came into our program, it was all based on the permits that were in place at the time at those landfills that closed, and most of the time those boundaries were pretty large. We never had a good way of dealing with how to carve off pieces that we didn't need for the program. We took a lot of property in, and we never really had a good way of getting rid of it. And so when the Wadena problem came up, we thought it would probably be good if we could work on some legislation that would make it a little bit easier for us to carve off pieces that we don't need in the program anymore and work with either the local units of government to do something with or return to productive use anyway. Besides Wadena, we probably have about three other ones that we're currently working on that are in kind of a same situation where there's some other type of use that's closed for the area, and we don't really need it. We're working with Winona County on their landfill, Waseca and Cook County, and we've also, to address some issues that we've had with other sites, we've got two sites where we didn't have a good way of dealing with it, and so we worked with the local units of government on friendly condemnations to carve off pieces, and that's not a very good process to either force local units of government through or for us to work through either. So we were working with them to try and put this language together. There's one other part of the proposed legislation. We have a number of sites in our program where we actually picked up smaller landfills and relocated them to a different location. We have 9 sites that we did that with out of the 112. And this legislation would give us a good way of basically carving those out of the program. They're all cleaned up. We're done with them. And there's really no need for us to be left with the management of those areas. Most of those are either city or county properties that we just soon turn back to them and let them do with as they see fit. So the second part of this bill is actually to allow us to basically delist properties that we don't.
Okay, members, any questions? Hearing none, would
I just want to thank. That's what I would like to have somebody on the committee do, is move the bill to the Senate floor, I believe. I recommend to pass.
Senator Gazelka moves Senate File 855 to pass and recommend it to the Senate floor. Any further discussion? Before that, I'd like to thank Senator Hoffman for bringing the bill forward, and thank you for the work. I know I was fairly close to the tornado that day, and didn't happen to get over there. But I know I have some friends there, that were personally struck by that tornado, and I think it's once again another another indication of what Minnesota can do. Minnesota and how we react to our disasters, and we're going through a couple of them right now, as we all know, with the floods. So, hearing no other discussion. All in favor of the bill, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Yes, thank you.
Mr. Chair, members.
Members, the next bill is Senate File 657. It is a bill that I'm introducing. It is the Clean Water Bill. I'm going to do it from here, members, for no other particular reason other than it's just, I guess, Andy, we may have some testifiers at the other end. And I will be having Mr. Knopf go through it. But before I do that, I have an author's amendment. It's a delete all amendment. And I would offer that at this time.
Look at this one.
That would be the A1 amendment. Senator Higgins.
Since you're chair,
could
I also offer?
I'd like to offer, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Senator
I'd like to Hall offer the A1 amendment.
Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Bill is in order. And members, this is the annual. Biannual clean water. The reason I hesitated there is because some of the constitutional amendment funds are actually annual, not biannual. This one happens to be annual. And then this, of course, is the clean water from the tax the increases that we, the Minnesotans, voted on in 2008. The bill is pretty straightforward, members. One thing, however, there is a major change, and I think that's going to create some discussion here with regards to the makeup of the existing Clean Water Council. And what you're going to see is you're going to see the amendment show that there would be a change in the makeup, and it would be somewhat similar to the Lessard-Sams current council, and as to how that is made up, and through the same statutes and same rules. So, with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Knopf and have him take us through the bill.
Mr. Chair and members, if you start on page one, I won't go through the numbers. You've got a spreadsheet from Mr. Mueller that has the numbers. In fact, he shows it comparing to the current biennium and governor's budget, and I'll leave Mr. Mueller and the committee to deal with that later. But you'll see the riders that, and some of the things that the money's being appropriated for are comparable to 2 years ago. Some of them are new, but you've got monitoring for pesticide degradates in water. You've got the increased monitoring nitrates, and then also money for the Ag BMP loan program. Some of the money will be going out to local lenders. And then some of it stays for administering the Department of Agriculture. And then you've got pilot projects for research. Also some money for a database on water-related research. And then on the bottom of page two, I want to make sure people understood that this paragraph G, that was in the agriculture bill that passed the Senate, and it was left in conference committee to be put in the clean water bill. It basically just allows the money that was appropriated 2 years ago to continue to be available for the Department of Agriculture for research and pilot projects. It was, again, a governor's recommendation also. And then
there's... Mr. Knopf?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, excuse me. Mr. Knopf, how much money are we talking about there?
Mr. Mueller can tell you that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Higgins, it's somewhere around $1 million, depends on when the point in time, but... By the time we wrap up here, it'll probably be a little bit less than that. But
thanks.
Mr. Chair, continuing, Public Facilities Authority, again, this is money that's similar to what was appropriated 2 years ago for the TMDL grant program, for the Phosphorus Reduction Grant Program, and Small Community Wastewater Treatment Systems. And you'll see that they can transfer money if they have uncommitted money. They can also transfer to eligible projects under any of the programs listed in paragraph D. And then for the PCA, again, similar to before, 2 years ago, there's money for completion of statewide assessments of surface water quality and trends. And you've got money for the TMDL studies.
Also money for groundwater assessment. In paragraph C, paragraph D has the money for the St. Louis River in Duluth Harbor. And you'll see that that's at a rate of 65% non-state money to 35% state money. We've got money for the Clean Water Partnership Program. This would be in addition to what was in the budget bill. And there's money for stormwater research and guidance in paragraph F. Paragraph G for research and database development. We've got money for NPDES, wastewater and stormwater. And then also money in paragraph I that will be transferred to the EQB to characterize groundwater flow and aquifer in the I-94 corridor. On 5.32, there will be money canceled because it wasn't used for ethanol plants from 2009. And what this does is it reappropriates it. You'll see some language in later where we're broadening that to include the use of stormwater instead of groundwater. So we'll see that language later on. But this is basically reappropriating the $1 million from 2 years ago because it's going to be going. It expires on June 30th of this year, and it's my understanding that it will not be spent. It was appropriated for a similar purpose. The purpose didn't fit anymore, and so this is now to make it fit. What the plan is. Paragraph K, you'll see the $500,000 for the wild rice standards study. There was $1 million in the budget bill for that, and this is the other $500,000 for that study. And then at DNR, we've got the an expansion of stream flow monitoring. There's also money for the IBI, or the Index of Biological Integrity Assessments, money for mercury contamination of fish, TMDL development. DNR does have a role in developing TMDLs. And then there's also money for water supply planning and monitoring, web-based electronic permitting, and also for shoreland stewardship and TMDL implementation. Also, you'll see money for high-resolution digital elevation data, also called LIDAR. As far as I know, I think this completes that project to get the entire state mapped with LIDAR. And then there's money for decision support tools. And then last year there was $1 million put in the base for metropolitan groundwater monitoring. That was going to be for this year. They were short $1 million last year, what was needed. And so this appropriates the money that was set aside last year. And then, Mr. Chairman, under Bowser, we've got the large amount of money for the pollution reduction and restoration grants to local government units and joint powers organizations. And then there's also money for local resource protection enhancement grants, and you'll see on 9.15 to 9.16 of this amount, at least $1.5 million is for county SSTS implementation. There's also money for accountability and value results. This is comparable to what was appropriated 2 years ago for this purpose. Then money for technical assistance for conservation drainage in consultation with the drainage work group. We also have money for permanent conservation easements and riparian buffers adjacent to public waters. They must be at least 50 feet unless there's a natural impediment or a road. And then there's money for permanent conservation easements on wellhead protection areas in paragraph F. Paragraph G provides money for community partners grants to local units of government for several activities. And then we've got money for restoration audits in paragraph H. And then there's also in the next paragraph, we have a provision that has $500,000 each year is for restoration maintenance and other activities through Conservation Corps Minnesota. And then in the next paragraph, we allow the board to shift grant funds if they're to leverage federal or their non-state funds. Appropriations are available until June 30, 2014. Department of Health, money for public health concerns, and contaminants found in drinking water. Also money for the protection of drinking water sources in paragraph B. C is for cost-share assistance for public and private well owners. And D is money for to expand the county well index. And for the Metropolitan Council, there's money for implementation of the Master Water Supply Plan. This is a continuation. They received money 2 years ago for the same purpose.
And then in the legislature, there's a blank right now for how much money would be used for the Legislative Coordinating Commission for administration expenses of the Clean Water Council, which we'll get to the language later. And then there's also $11,000 for the cost of the website. Now we'll get into the statutory language, Mr. Chair. The first section of that is Section 10, and what this does is it puts the citizen members of the Clean Water Council, it basically makes them public officials, so they will be subject to the economic interest reporting and subject to the gift ban. So any citizen member of the Clean Water Council, currently the current council members are not subject to the gift ban or subject to the economic interest reporting. Section 11, there will be a number of sections here now that are updating the Clean Water Legacy Act to include groundwater protection. When the act was passed in was it 2006, there wasn't a discussion at that point in time as having it apply to groundwater, but the constitutional amendment applies to groundwater. So this is kind of reformatting the Clean Water Legacy Act to also include groundwater. And so a number of sections, Section 11, that's basically what it does. Same with Section 12, we're adding groundwater. Section 13, we're adding groundwater. And Section 14 is the addition of groundwater. And then Section 15 is more of a technical change. Instead of the legacy account, which is being repealed in here, since the legacy account was never used, the Clean Water Legacy Account, there's never any money put into that. And so this would now state it to the fund, which is the constitutional fund. Section 16 deals with adding groundwater also to the duties under the Clean Water Legacy Act. Section 17 is what the chairman mentioned. This is a revamped version of the Clean Water Council, modeled after the Lessard-Sams Outdoor Heritage Council. It will include four legislators and eight public members appointed, four by the governor of the public members and two by the Speaker of the House and two by the Senate Committee on Rules and Subcommittee and Committees of Rules and Administration.
Excuse me, Mr. Knopf. Members, in your packet, you do have a comparison. You may want to take that out at this point. Showing you it's this one here with the three levels on it. Excuse me. And you have the current council, LOHC council on the left, the clean water proposal in the center. That's what we're talking about now, and the current one on the far right, just for your reference. Go ahead and continue, please.
Mr. Chair, again, so, and then there are going to be staggered appointments in the first part. This is similar to what we did with the Lessard-Sams Council. The legislators will serve at the pleasure of the appointing authority. You'll see that in 18.23 to 18.24. It also includes the chairs, or it could be the chair's designee for the committee for the Environmental Resource Finance Committee. And then it also, the terms and compensation removal for public members is under 15.0575, which means they're four-year members. Then the first meeting of the council should be no later than November 15th of 2011. It's convened by the chair of the LCC. And then the council may appoint, upon coordination with the Legislative Coordinating Commission, the council may appoint nonpartisan staff. Up to 1% of the annual revenue fund may be used to pay for administrative expenses of the council. That's comparable to what the Lessard-Sams Council language is. Also, then we have council recommendations by January 15th of each odd-numbered year. Council shall make recommendations on the appropriation of money from the fund and other policies under this chapter that are consistent with the Constitution and state law. And the recommendation of the council require a vote of at least 9 members of the council. That's comparable to Lessard-Sams, so when the recommendations are included, at least one legislative member would, if all 8 citizen members wanted to vote for something, it makes sure that there's a supermajority before being sent to the legislature. And then it also requires coordination with the Lessard-Sams Outdoor Heritage Council and the LCCMR and Bowser, Soil Water Conservation District, and experts from Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, development of a process that ensures citizen potential. And then in Subdivision 3 of Conflict of Interest, basically providing that a council member should not be an advocate for or against an action that is a potential conflict of interest. And you can see in paragraph B, it kind of it goes on to explain that more. This is the same language that the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council uses. Open meetings, meetings of the council and other groups shall be open to the public. The one thing, the one difference here right now between this and Lasard Sam's, this is more like the LCCMR. If you look on 20.15, for the purpose of this subdivision, a meeting occurs when a quorum is present and the members take action on the mat on any matter relating to duties of the council. This would be a little similar to the LCCMR. And then it also, in paragraph 3, provides similar language to LCCMR unless Lasard Sam's about enforcing that. It also requires the legislative auditor. There's no timeline on it, but it does require legislative audits of the Clean Water Fund expenditures. And then Section 18, again, this is language in the Clean Water Legacy Act that provides, that adds groundwater. There's also some technical changes to that, but it's basically getting groundwater into the public and stakeholder participation part of that act. Section 19, I mentioned this earlier about the $1 million that's being reappropriated for ethanol plants and for using other sources of water than groundwater. And this is a statutory change that would allow for that. Under current law, it could be, you could only use wastewater for that. Apparently, there are some ethanol plants that have looked into using stormwater as a replacement for groundwater in their production process. So the changes, this was also in Senator Ingebrigtsen's bill, Senate File 485, the language here. And then Section 20 provides that a recipient of funds appropriated in this act shall incorporate civic engagement and public education in implementing projects and programs funded. Section 21 says that the money appropriated may not be spent on activities unless they are directly related to and necessary for a specific appropriation to make sure that they're not taking indirect costs. And in the repealer section, you have we're repealing the existing Clean Water Council and the existing Clean Water Legacy account, which has never been used. And so that's the end, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if you wanted to go over the comparison summary or not. This one page.
Members, let's pull out the comparison summary because this is a fairly significant change here. And we'll have Mr. Knopf go through that as well. If you have any questions, we'll hold it till we get to the end of that.
Well, Mr. Chair, you can see on the number of members, you see the difference. Right now there are 23 members of the Clean Water Council, with four of them non-voting. The other 19 are specified in the law. Number of legislators, there's none in the current Clean Water Council. This would be four legislators similar to the Lasard Sam's, and they would be voting members. Public members, you can see that there are eight in this proposal and 19, all governor appointed on the public members. And then public members designated as public officials. The current LSOHC, they are subject to that. And same with under this proposal, but not in the current Clean Water Council. The automatic inclusion of environment finance chairs is not, there are no legislative, there's a House member. The Clean Water Council was appointed before he became a House member. And then this would be automatic inclusion. The terms.
Excuse me, Mr. Does it say the chairs or their designees?
Chairs are the designees, yes.
Good, thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Kielash.
Does that mean that they automatically become one of the two, either senators or representatives, or is that on top of
that's,
four that are appointed?
That's automatic. Yeah, Mr. Chair, that's automatic. It's the majority party member is the chair or the chair's designee. That's the way it works on Lasard Sam's.
Certainly, report. And Senator Kielash, just for your information, and maybe you don't know, when it comes to the Lasard Sam's, there's one Democrat senator, one Republican senator, so that's bipartisan.
I guess my question is, you have two senators, two House members. Does the inclusion of the chairs, that means one of those senators is going to be the environmental chair?
Yes.
Correct. Okay. I just want to make sure we're yes. Double in on that.
Right.
And the terms, currently the LSOHC says 4 years, but as part of Senator Ingebrigtsen's bill on the LSOHC, there was a recommendation from the council because there was some confusion over how that would with legislative members. So it will be what you see for Clean Water Council is how it also reads in Senator Ingebrigtsen's bill. for the LSOHC. So they're moving to the same as the what you see for under that for 2011 Clean Water Council. Clean Water Council, you see public members are four-year agency members at the pleasure. Administrative expenses up to 1% for both those. PCA just covers administrative costs of the current Clean Water Council. Open meeting law, you'll see the Lessard Sams right now has to comply with the local government one, which means all meetings, even if there are no decisions made. For this one, it's modeled after the LCCMR for decisions only. The Clean Water Council, as I understand the law, and I haven't checked into whether they've been doing this, but they're supposed to be following the local government law. It doesn't spell that out in their statute, but if you look at the look at Chapter 13D, it appears to me that they would fit under that. Appointment of staff for the current Lessard Council, it's approval of the LCC. For this, it'd be coordination with the LCC and its agency staff for the current Clean Water Council. Number of votes required, this would be the same as the LSOHC at 9 3/4 of the members. It's only a majority for the Clean Water Council, unless they've set up something different, but there's nothing required in law to go beyond a majority. Strategic plan, you can see that they've got the plan requirements for the LSOHC of 10 and 25 years. These basically, for the Clean Water Act, the money was for, was appropriate the university for the water sustainability report, so there is no specific requirement either the current act or the as far as going out 10 years or 25 years. Legislative audit required every 2 years in the Lessard Sams. This would require legislative audit, but not necessarily every 2 years. Under the Clean Water Council, there's a general law for the auditor on audits, and there isn't anything specific in their statute. Legislative oversight, there's a joint hearing required in the Lessard Sams Auditor Heritage Council statutes. This would just there are reporting requirements for both the Clean Water Council and the under this proposal and the existing one. Then there's also a couple of provisions that were added to the Lessard Sams on revenue from land acquired and acquiring lands in public domain. These are not necessarily don't necessarily apply to the Clean Water Council. It's not in the existing Clean Water Council or in this proposal. Restoration evaluations, though, is current law for both the Clean Water Fund and for the Outdoor Heritage Fund. So, Mr. Chair, that's it.
Members, any questions? Any questions about the makeup of the proposal or the previous? Senator Pat.
Mr. Chairman, could you just talk a little bit about where this proposal is coming from and why you think this is a good idea?
Sure. Thank you for that. And where it's coming from is me, basically, being a member of the existing Lessard Sams Alto Heritage and seeing how well that does work. And quite frankly, some confusion, I think, and I think a lot of the legislators will probably agree with me when I say it's somewhat confusing as to how the how folks go about bringing proposals forward that pertain to clean water funding portion of the Heritage Fund. It's always been somewhat perplexing to myself and others. So when you look at the makeup of the council, and I have to be very clear when I say I don't think there's anything or any improprieties going on here. I don't think there's any. There's any, at least I have not been aware of, and if anybody has, they can certainly share that, but there has not been any complaints about the way the Clean Water Council has run over the years. It appears to be just a little cumbersome, and in a new proposal, in a new piece of legislation that came across, actually they were going to be adding some legislative members there, and they were going to be non-voting members. I was troubled by that, whereas Lessard Sams, we do have voting members there. After all, it's strictly a recommendation that comes to us, as you all know, and those recommendations should certainly have the support of the members that are on the committee. And by way of supporting that, of course, you would be a voting member. The disclosure part is again, there's nothing there. I don't think anybody's trying to hide. It just makes it a little bit more transparent, similar to the other portion of the legacy money, which is Lessard Sams. As well as I made some notes here for myself here. Moving down to the public members, I want to make it very clear. I don't care who the governor is. It's 19 members are appointed by the governor. That doesn't matter to me either, whether it's a Democrat or Republican. It's just that could be problematic. I'm not saying it is, but it could be problematic in years to come. And I think, again, the members that are put on the committee are from all from the governor's office and the legislative bodies. This, I think, is again a little bit more. A little bit more fair, a little bit more transparent as well. The potential wouldn't be there for any stacking, if you would. And again, I say that very cautiously. I don't think that's going on. I just think, again, just in the purview of cleaning things up and making it a little more easy for me to explain to my constituents. The folks that administer the clean water right now is the PCA administration, and you can tell I'm very cautious. There's been no accusations of anything like that, but when the PCA and the DNR are probably going to be some of the biggest recipients of that, it seems to me that we as legislators would want to make sure that there's not a perception that. Well, the PCA is certainly going to, or the DNR, are going to be getting these dollars without making it a fair playing field. So that perception was there. That was probably one of the biggest ones that I had, the biggest problems that I had with the makeup of the current council. When asked as to how much it actually costs to administer the current Clean Water Council, I don't know, did we receive, something similar, or I guess something that was somewhat minor, so I really don't think we got an accurate dollar amount from them, because it has been melded into their department, into the PCA's department. So how do you come up with those figures, you know? So I certainly understand that. This particular bill is, again, similar to the Lessard-Sams makeup, where it's very clear that up to 1% can be used for administration fees. And by the way, the administrative fees over on the Lessard-Sams is actually only using one half of 1% at this point. So, but it is still covered up to 1% should they need that. So those are the reasons, basically, just trying to get the same kind of a makeup for all parts of the heritage, or at least two-thirds of the heritage dollars. And I don't know if that was clear enough of an explanation, but I can certainly stand for questions. And I think it's a point we need to discuss. Senator Kielosch, did you raise your hand?
Well, I'm sorry. I'm a little confused, so I'm going to ask it. But when I read the creation membership here, number one, under subdivision one, paragraph A, it says two members appointed by the Senate subcommittee and committees on rules and administration, two public members appointed by the Speaker of the House, so that would mean citizens, is that where we're going?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Four members by the governor, two members appointed of the Senate, appointed by the Senate Subcommittee on Rules and Administration, and two members of the House of Representatives. That gives the legislature 8 of the 12? Decisions on 8 of the 12?
2, 4. 8 of the 12, yes.
8 of the 12?
That includes the governor appointments.
Well, the governor appointments are 4. We've got the Senate Committee on Rules and Administration appointing the two senators,
Four each area.
Four at each one. So yep. The legislature's got eight votes in this committee, correct?
That's right.
Because of the choices.
House and Senate would be a total of 8.
And we have no experts from any of the departments on talking with the ability to describe what's going on with the various projects that are presented to say, you know, here's the scientific evidence that this works or doesn't work. And I think we're missing something on that a little bit. So I'm thinking that we ought to have at least a couple of these people be experts in a couple different areas of water, clean water quality throughout the state. So
if I could answer that, then thank you for those concerns. That was one of the parts that I omitted or missed here. Okay. Several things that I had, but there's just absolutely no question that the people you're talking about, the agencies you're talking about, are going to be utilized all the time. They're going to be at every committee meeting, similar to what Lessard Sams has now. There are interested parties. There are State Department professionals that are there at the disposal for gathering information, regulations, statutes. That all would be expected to be at those meetings, just like anything else. They just simply no longer would be members of the voting committee. Is that clear? Does that make sense?
Mr. Chair, it just seems like it could be a political football, but possibility being a political football, because, you know, you could appoint partisans or one way of looking at water instead of having a variety of ways of looking at water, because there's so many appointed by the legislature and the governor. And it doesn't say which of the public members, how many of the public members have to have practical experience by the two the legislates the division of it. So that means that the governor can only appoint folks with science policy, and so we'd have eight with science stuff on it or knowledge of the clean waters on this committee based on practical experience in that. Just could you explain a little deeper?
Senator, the public members that are going to be appointed to any of these committees are certainly going to be people that know and understand what's going on with that particular area. That I think is the beauty of a citizens committee versus all political committee, where you actually have and again I keep going back to Lessard. You have folks that are very familiar with hunting and fishing norms, wildlife management areas, things like that. You're going to have people on a clean water committee that knows and does clean water. And if you and I are in charge of appointing those people and we don't do that, then we're not doing very good due diligence. And I don't think that's going to be an issue at all. Political football, I'm not understanding that comment at all.
Mr. Chair, you love the Lessard Sams, and I find that there's issues with proposals coming out of the metro area for fishing lakes, for things that definitely qualify under the Lessard Sams that don't even get to pass the first round. And I find that being a little too, not outstate, but wildlife-focused and not enough on the other attributes that the metro area has. It's a major flyway. It's got a lot of other things going to it. And, you know, the funding that comes into the metro area to enhance wildlife, to enhance access to it, to enhance the fishing experience for the area that has the largest population in the state, has been shortchanged on a regular basis so far with Lessard. And my part of my complaint of that is that when I ask why these cities aren't and park boards or whoever is not putting in requests for funding, they tell me they can't get past the first round. They put it in and they don't even get past the first round. So if you say, I mean, that's how the Lessard Sams committee has been working, because it's so outstate focused and not into the whole state. And the opportunities to have the most people in the state have opportunities to get access to the to nature and fishing and all the other things that are included in it. And so that's why I'm a little skeptical about your praise for Lessard Sams, because it doesn't necessarily serve in equal proportions to the I don't think, or at least it hasn't been proven so far, and with the continued complaints from the metro area legislators and public officials, that we're not getting a fair shake on that. That's what I'm concerned about with the clean water as well.
Well, obviously have to take issue a little bit. This is something that's been talked about since the inception of SART-SAMS. Senator Anderson, member of the committee, made it very clear, as well as I think Representative Hansen, on what they thought was the unfairness of the SART-SAMS dollars going metro versus rural. You know, and I think, you know, I don't want to use the old cliche, but I guess you have to really be out on I-94 or come on the weekend when it's opening fishing and hunting season. They're not coming to the city. They're going out state.
Mr. Chair, all during the week, there are people that live in the cities and near lakes that would like to have greater access to quality fishing. Yeah. And that has been ignored as well. And so...
Well, I beg to differ. We can argue about this all day long. Yeah. There's some funding going, I think, on the SART-SAMS that's coming into the metro area, and I think the committee's been very cognizant of that very issue, believe me, and not wanting to be criticized every time the bill comes forward. Furthermore, it again is only a recommendation. If you feel it's unfair coming through, we had the SART-SAMS bill here earlier already, I think probably 2 months ago. And if you felt that way then, you certainly have a time to address that. And nobody will stand in the way of that if you want to make amendments to make it anything different. But I just caution you saying that you have to be able to hunt and fish with those dollars. You have to be able to have access to that. And the city is a little problematic when it comes to hunting. Fishing. As you well know, fishing is there.
It's the lakes.
But I think in fairness to the committee, our first year, actually, we listened to all the parks. I think we had 40-some parks that came through our committee that first year. And we did that out of courtesy for everybody, but we shouldn't have, quite frankly. There was no parks funding in that SART-SAMS portion of that. It was a parks portion of that. And we'll get into this, no doubt, when it comes to proportionality when we start funding parks, and that'll be coming up next week.
Mr. Chair, I really didn't want to get into the argument over what my point being, though, is that the way the SART-SAMS is set up, the screening process that is going through SART-SAMS is with a certain focus. I don't want to create the same kind of focus with the clean water in the same way that that's working. If it's going to turn out to be, you know, one philosophy, one way of looking at clean water, and not a variety of issues throughout the whole state. I mean, there's ag issues, there's city issues, there's well issues, there's all kinds of issues that go with the clean water, and I want to make sure that all those things are covered and that they have status enough to be able to bring those other projects forward, and I'm not sure that the change is going to do that.
Well, I certainly appreciate that. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm listening to Senator Kielash, and I understand what he's saying, but I think as I look towards the legislation we're proposing, page 18.11, following through as far as how we're going to appoint people, you look at all the way down to 18.14, and one of the things we're looking at for the people we select is geographic balance. You know, that's, I think, something he's talking about. We're actually writing in the legislation here acknowledging that we want to pick people from geographic balance, gender, age, ethnicity, varying interests. And then C, you know, kind of as far as who we're picking, we want them to have practical experience or expertise or demonstrated knowledge in the science, policy, and practice of restoring, protecting, and enhancing the water quality in the lakes, et cetera. So I think as I look at what we're trying to accomplish, I think we're really – what he's talking about is in the legislation.
Thank you, and I agree with that. We even struggled the first couple of years and might have been criticized, I suppose. I don't know that the council could have been criticized for this, but of an imbalance of not having enough rural people on there. In fact, I think it was the northeast part of the state said they weren't. And I can look at Senator Saxog and say that I think they kind of felt like that wasn't there. So it's a balance. There's no question about it. But that's the appointing authorities. They have the opportunity to do that. And I can't help but feel comfortable in the selection process that we're going to select people who care and know about water and water quality. And if we do anything other than that, shame on us, frankly. So. Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, do you envision that the Clean Water Council change how it makes its recommendations? Now they do project-based recommendations, and so they fit really well with the water plans that everybody makes. Do you envision that would change, or would that continue to work the same way?
I envision, Senator Higgins, I envision it to change somewhat in that there's going to be proposals that will be brought forward to somebody who is not an employee of the state who chairs the meeting and who runs an objective meeting, who takes input from the MPCA, the DNR, as well as, in fact, they might be the proposers. In fact, in a lot of cases, they will be the proposers, more so probably than the Lessard-Sams. You'll probably see the majority of your appropriations come from the MPCA and the DNR, and included in that, of course, is Bowser. But there would be an actual setting, somewhat similar to what they do now. However, it would just be that much more, with the folks that would be in those positions, it would be much more non-institutional, if you will. Does that make any sense? We've made it a strong attempt, and I keep going back to we, and I know Senator Kielash looks at me, but
I'm looking at you.
I have to use a reference. You're looking at me. You're watching me. I know that. You have to use a reference, and we legislators have tried, I think, and I can't speak for Senator Saxog, but we've tried to stay out of, forgetting which committee I'm talking about here, try to stay out of the hierarchy part, not be chair or vice chair, for that reason, that we want the citizens to run the meeting, and we feel that'd be an easier sale for the folks that are paying the bills, to be able to tell them that's what's going on.
Mr. Chair, just a point of observation on this. When you're reducing the size of the council by almost half, you are also reducing the opportunity to have diversity on that council from greater parts of Minnesota and or different clean water viewpoints of the different kinds that we need to have. So that's part of my concern on this, is that we're not allowing the diversity, especially when you have so many of them appointed by the legislature and the governor and strictly scientific stuff.
Senator, I think that's a good point. We are coming down from a very large one to a more, what we'd like to think of as a more manageable number, maybe. Maybe some would say the opposite. Maybe some would say it's a lot easier to manage more or less people than more. I think that's probably a pretty fair argument. But that's certainly a point well taken. Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I support your effort to get more legislative involvement in this process. In fact, I don't think you're probably going quite as far as you should. And anybody who agrees with me, I've got lots of room for co-authors on a bill that makes a little more of an effort here.
The bill we're going to be hearing tomorrow?
I think so. I don't know if we'll do
or
it
later
tomorrow.
This afternoon.
Sure.
At
maybe
5
after
o'clock,
Easter.
Actually. I don't know if everybody understands the bill. Do you want to describe what you're talking about?
Well, it's actually Representative Hansen that did the bill drafting, but he has his initiative to turn these projects over to the legislature, and I carried the bill in the Senate for Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, Senator Scoy, are you making us full-time legislature while you're at it?
Point very well taken, Senator Higgins.
Are you ready for amendments?
I think what I want to do is first I want to go have Mr. Mueller go through the spreadsheet real quickly here, because I know there's some members that want to get going sometime before midnight. Say that in a joking fashion. I don't think it will take that long, but we'll open it up for amendments after that. Mr. Mueller.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm certainly not going to go through the spreadsheet line by line. I'm just going to point out what the spreadsheet is showing. It shows the current spending, which was accomplished over two chapters, one in 2009 and one in 2010. We made a few amendments. So that's the column that shows current biennium is a total of those two bills, and this is at the appropriation level. There'll probably be some money that cancels back out of these appropriations from 2010 and 11. Then it shows Gov's budget, and then the column on the right is the delete everything amendment. And you can see the agency totals. I won't go through all of them, but I will go to the last page, and you can see the total from the bill and compare that to the current biennium and then what the available funds are coming into the Clean Water Fund. You'll see current biennium, we appropriated $152 million. For this bill, is appropriating $179.2 million. The amount of money coming into the Clean Water Fund, you'll see on line 99, is $86.4 million in 12, fiscal year 12, and $88.9 million roughly in fiscal year 13. And there's a little bit of carryover money coming over from the current biennium also, about $20 million, you'll see on line 101. Some of that is being absorbed from carryover money that we still owe from the current biennium. That $13.79 million you see on line 96, a lot of that is money from the Public Facilities Authority. That's money that we previously appropriated that still will be spent in the next biennium. So we're leaving a somewhat slim fund balance here on line 102 after if we appropriate everything in this bill, but still I think well within means, especially compared to what the governor had proposed. We're allowing about $2.3 million to $2.8 million of a fund balance in the Clean Water Fund. The governor was proposing a much smaller fund balance. So the governor was proposing spending more money, almost $182 million of clean water money, a little bit less than that. So that's all I'm going to point out for that. Again, I tried making comparisons over what we're spending in the current biennium. Everything may not line up perfectly, and there may be some different descriptions in the bill, but I tried lining them up the best they could. That's about it for the spreadsheet.
Thank you. Any questions of Mr. Mueller? Senator Higgins did ask about an amendment. I know she has one, but she has escaped here, so I'm not sure. Maybe if you could step out. I think she's probably just out in the hall. Members, you know, Senator Kielosch, too, I think it should be pointed out that it isn't so often, or not so much the project based on this side of the constitutional amendment as it is a long-term water sustainability. And I think that's something we have to stay focused on, not just projects. Whereas over on the other part, it is projects. So, and I think we have to keep that in mind, and I think it would be short-sighted for us not to do that. So I think that's important to remember and keep in mind. Again, I think she does have an amendment here. Senator Higgins, you have an amendment.
Mr. Chair, a two amendment.
And do you have somebody that you want to testify to?
I do.
See, he's there. The gentleman's here.
I have Mr. Mickelson and Mr. McGuff.
Okay. Is the A2 amendment passed out? It's being passed out.
And while it's being passed out, Mr. Chair, if I could start to explain a little bit about it. The state has contributed to the rehabilitation of an old theater on Hennepin Avenue in downtown Minneapolis called the Schubert Theater, which has now been renamed the Coles Center for Dance and the Performing Arts. Senator Langseth worked very hard on the bonding bill where we were able to get $12 million of a $42 million project, which will become the venue for dance in the Twin Cities someday real soon. And unfortunately, when they were working on various pieces of the construction, they ran into an abandoned well, and really blew a hole in the budget, I guess is probably the easiest way to say it. So this amendment would give a grant to the Coles Center for some of what they spent doing the work that was nowhere on anybody's budget, nowhere on anybody's mind when they were working on it. And if Mr. Mickelson and Mr. McGough could come and give us some of the gory details, I know they could say it a lot better.
Senator Higgins, if I could, I think the amendment says the whole price. We agreed on an amendment at $154,000. So if we can make that change, does that have to be done, or can that just be put in the amendment?
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins can just include that in her amendment if she wants to change the number from $311,000 to
$154,000.
She just incorporates that.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Hi. Thank you.
Please identify yourself.
For the record, Stacy Mickelson with Art Space Projects and the Cole Center.
Sure. We got a handout. Would staff please do a handout for us, please? Go ahead, please.
And, Mr. Chair, my name is Mike McGough. I'm with McGough Companies.
Welcome.
We asked Senator Higgins to introduce this amendment to help recapture some of the money that we did lose in the budget. There was $1.2 million associated with this well and other cleanup at the site that was unidentified and unintended costs that we didn't have built into our budget going forward. There was no record of the well at the State Department of Health. There was no record of the well at the city or county. And so when we began to excavate for the footings at the site for the stage house and the new atrium, the pieces that the $12 million in state bonds is funding, we found this well that was a 622-foot well with an oil-lubricated pump lodged at about 500-something feet that, in order to proceed with work at the site, the Department of Health correctly said you have to cap and seal that, but before you do, you have to get that pump out, and so it took us a course of about 6 to 8 weeks to fish that out piece by piece. I have Mike McGough here with me, who is with McGough Construction, who is the builder of this project, and I would like for him to kind of speak in great detail in better detail than I can give you, about what they found at the site and why we arrived at the numbers we've arrived at on the backside of this that I'd like to hand out to staff to pass around.
Thank you.
So, before Mike starts, maybe you guys should have this in your hand, and then you can follow along with us.
Members, I'd like to comment with regards to the dollars. There are dollars here that on the bottom line that would cover this. I did have conversations with the witness as well as Senator Higgins before this. These dollars, I think, original dollars were from bonding. Is that correct? And Senator Langseth, I think you know something about this. Would you like to comment one way?
Mr. Chair, I guess it was $12 million that we came up with.
Correct.
About, I don't know, 25% or something like of the project. And it's been going for a long time. And, of course, what happened was that they ran into this well, which the people involved in the theater had absolutely nothing to do with it. And I think it had been something like 50 years sitting there. But the Department of Health insisted that they not only cap the well but get that pump out of there, and it ended up costing them a lot more money, and so I would support this this amendment.
Senator Langseth, thank you. When was that appropriation? Do you remember? Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Langseth, we received $1 million in 2005 for a planning grant, and in 2006 we received the $11 million for the capital piece of the project, so a total of 12 over those two cycles. And the front seat, the front page of this document shows, in essence, what the program is, what the Cole Center will be, as Senator Higgins had described. And then if you refer to the back side, you'll see in some of those, in the pink box, kind of a narrative about what the problems were that we found that Mr. McGough will address. And then a couple of diagrams showing you what we found when we went underground. So I'll turn it over to Mr. McGough if you would like.
Please, go ahead.
During the excavation of April of last year, during the excavation of the back of the stage house, we did find the well, and as procedure goes, we contacted the health department and followed their instruction for the well mitigation. I'll be very brief and open it up to questions. Basically, we found this well, which was never abandoned properly from the existing building that was currently there, the old West Hotel, which was demolished in the 1950s. was about a 620-foot deep well. And again, what they did is they basically cut off the shaft and let the pump and the shaft drop. And so that was basically the problem we had in the time frame it took to get that mitigated. So it took about 7.5 weeks, which was a huge delay in our project schedule. And unfortunately, the well is actually located in a portion of the project where we really couldn't do or continue much of the construction until we got the well mitigated, because, again, it was in the main part of the stage house where the excavation was taking place. That's basically it.
Members, any questions? Senator Higgins renews her.
Mr. Chair, the A2 amendment as modified.
Senator Higgins moves the A2 amendment as modified. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Carries. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else from the who would like to testify with regards to the to the bill?
John's waving his hand.
Who is?
I'll wait till these guys are done. I'll wait till they're done.
We'll start from the right, from our right. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Whitney Clark. I'm the executive director of Friends of the Mississippi River. We're a St. Paul-based nonprofit organization dedicated to protecting the Mississippi River and its watershed. I'm here today representing our members, 1,700 members, more than 3,000 annual volunteers, and hundreds of participants in our events and activities who see the river as both a natural resource of international significance, but of course also a local treasure. And I'm here to talk about a specific part of the bill today regarding the allocation for $12 million for stream buffer implementation, which would be Section E, line 10.9. In general, we strongly support the implementation of natural stream buffers on all public waterways throughout the state. As members know, buffers are natural filters that use plants and trees to clean and filter water, absorb pollutants, and slow runoff before they reach surface water and, of course, our drinking water. This is a great approach, a common-sense approach to keeping our waters clean. I did bring some handouts today that I can pass out.
I believe they're in the process or almost all passed out here.
Those are different sets.
Oh, I'm sorry.
To it, but I've got a couple of different handouts related to buffers here. When the have the chance to get those passed
sure,
out.
Thank you.
We think that maintaining a 50-foot ag buffer along public waterways is important. In fact, it's been the law in Minnesota for over 20 years, which is laid out in one of the handouts that's coming around. The Minnesota statutes require all agricultural operations adjacent to public waters to maintain a permanent perennial vegetative buffer no less than 50 feet from the ordinary high water line. This is called the shore impact zone, but it's commonly referred to as a buffer. While there are some exceptions for farms with approved environmental management plans, the vast majority of farm operations are required to maintain this 50-foot buffer, and that's been in place, as I said, for more than 20 years. Unfortunately, compliance with this law is very spotty, very low, and there's a handout coming around. The color portion on the backside is a map that represents the approximate stream buffer compliance rates by county throughout Minnesota, and you can see we're not doing as good a job as we could to enforce existing state law regarding buffers. Luckily, there have been some good developments. We've learned some things in the last several years. We don't need to force farmers' hands or pay them to take these buffer filters out of cultivation. In fact, we found improving buffer compliance is relatively easy, and I would give as an example, Dodge County a couple of years ago was able to achieve very dramatic improvements in overall compliance with one staff person, about 3 to 5% of her time in the spring and fall of the year, over just a couple of years simply by notifying non-compliant landowners. And most of these farmers willingly and even some of them enthusiastically modified their practices. Now that's beginning to catch on in Goodhue, Olmsted, Dakota, Winona, and several other counties are now using this approach with great effect. So I guess the message here is pretty simple. Compliance notification works. They're successful, and they get compliance with farmers who obviously want to do the right thing and want to comply with the law. And that's really important because legacy amendment dollars are scarce, and we don't think that they should be invested in paying people to comply with the law. They should instead be directed toward practices that exceed the minimum standards and provide additional environmental services. So, as written, this bill assigns $12 million for projects which may include paying people to comply with existing law, which we oppose. I would just mention and remind you that we do have numerous programs, state, federal, and some local programs like CRP, RIM, EQIP, CSP, the Ag BMP loan programs, and many other programs at the county level and watershed level that are designed to do just this, help producers meet their conservation objectives. So our position is that the legacy dollar should not be and cannot be used to supplant existing programs, and they shouldn't be used to pay anyone to comply with this law. Those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions from Mr. Clark? Welcome to the committee. State your name, please.
All right. Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Daryl Gerber, and I'm a program coordinator with Clean Water Action. We're a member-based organization with almost 90,000 members in Minnesota. And I would like to focus my comments today on a chronic problem that we have in Minnesota that does affect our public health as well as our environment, and that are the faulty septic systems. And by the latest estimates that are available, there are about 500,000 homes in Minnesota that are on septic systems or don't rely on the public sewage treatment systems. And in addition to that are about nearly 7,000 businesses. They do play an important role for many of the areas of the state on ensuring that Minnesotans actually have available a safe and cost-effective way of treating sewage. I can say that personally I grew up with in a house that was using a septic system until I actually moved away and went to college. Unfortunately, many of these systems in Minnesota are faulty. The PCA actually estimates that about 40% of those that are out there are either failing or even worse or what is called a imminent threat to public health and safety. In many of the cases, this is due to poor design. Part of that is that many of these actually, they last a long time, and they were put in place before a lot of the standards, the newer standards, were even actually in place legally. A number of them, even worse, are actually what are called straight pipe systems, about 55,000 straight pipe systems. And these are the sewage treatment systems that don't have any in-ground treatment. So really, they're a straight pipe sending sewage either into a stream or a lake or something, or into the drain tile systems in agricultural areas.
Sir, if I could stop you there and just inquire here on a couple of the numbers you have. And I'm working off of your, I think it's your document here. It says septics, much, much more to do. The 500,000 homes and 7,000 businesses, can you tell me, I mean, what percent that is, what that represents, the percentage?
Mr. Chair, committee, I don't know what that percentage is.
Also, the 55,000 straight pipes. We had some straight pipe discussion in this committee some days ago. Can you tell me how you know that? That's very concerning to me, that number.
Chair, committee, Actually, I got that from PCA documents, so I actually can't say how they got the numbers.
Okay, that's fine. Go ahead and continue.
If we wanted the answer, we could call them up to
Senator Dames.
Mr. Chair, in alluding to that 55,000, you're saying that there's 55,000 straight pipes with no treatment system whatsoever. That's not my understanding. My understanding is there's 40,000 that may have a straight pipe, but there's also maybe a septic tank system to them. So I think there's a considerable difference in what information you're giving us today than we received the other day under testimony.
Senator, thanks for that. And I think maybe we'll get some testimony from the agency with regards to those numbers. If they were the ones that came up with the numbers, we can have them answer to that. But go ahead and continue, please.
Yeah, thank you. And actually, I would say a lot of ways that doesn't kind of change the basic message that there are a lot of straight pipe systems out there that actually have been illegal since the Clean Water Act was passed in 1972. And one of the things, too, about this, what we're talking about are systems that are sending sewage into our waters or out there into the public areas. And some of the issues that come up are really the public health issues as well as environmental. The untreated sewage has about 10 times the suspended solids in it as treated sewage. This is the stuff that contributes to a lot of the impairments in many areas for total suspended solids. It also has 50 to 100 times the nitrates of treated sewage. This is the stuff that is involved with blue baby syndrome and other contributes to the problems downstream with impairments like the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. They also can have up to tens of thousands times the fecal matter in them as treated sewage. In fact, that kind of think of that as one house can actually send out more bacteria through a faulty or an imminent threat to public health system than a public treatment system that handles thousands of other homes. They also, those that are exposed to the sewage during swimming can actually have some minor problems like sore throats, ear infections, diarrhea, or even up to more serious health problems and even life-threatening issues like meningitis, encephalitis, and severe gastroenteritis. And then I already mentioned the problems with drinking water contamination and the blue baby syndrome and even growing concerns with their impacts, nitrates impacts on the endocrine system. The state has actually taken a lot of steps over this. You've probably heard about some of those already in previous testimony. 1994 was the year that there were minimum standards put on the construction and new construction and replacement systems. As you can see, we have a long ways to go, and the legislature did recognize that several years ago when they did direct the PCA to put together a 10-year plan. And in that report that was issued in 2004, they did make a number of recommendations, and an important one and one that they emphasized several times in there was providing funding in order to support the counties and local governments in their enforcement of these laws, as well as to really help get these older systems or faulty and failing systems turned over and actually brought into compliance. So we are asking the committee today to actually dedicate $7.5 million towards cleaning these, towards the SSTS systems, which matches the governor's recommendation. The amount that was set aside in here specifically for this in the A1 amendment is $3 million. We also ask that any of the prioritization for helping clean up the systems also be targeted towards low-income households. And the reason for that not only is actually helping these households comply, bring these systems into compliance, but also it gives an opportunity to get a larger benefit from the dollars in new complying systems, because these are people that we're seeing that just aren't complying because they can't afford it because of monetary issues. So thank you, and I'll take any questions.
Any questions from the witness? Sir, last year, looking at the appropriations for the, for the current biennium, there's $3.5 million. Does that ring any bells at all? The document I have has got $3.5 million for the biennium.
Let me find that section. Chair and members, the section I'm referring to is actually 9.15 and 9 through 9.16, which dedicates 1.5 per year.
Yeah, that's the same. That's the same number.
What's the same?
In the A1 amendment.
All right. I understand the governor's recommendations were nothing.
They were actually, and I'm not sure why it didn't. Chair, the numbers that we brought out, and I don't have the particular source of his budget recommendations, but we got $7.5 million that we found.
I'll let Mr. Mueller address that. Where the dollars are here,
Mr. Chairman and members, it's more just about which agency is running a program. The PCA, you'll see on if you go back to the spreadsheet. On page 1, line 33, is where I'm showing the governor's $7.5 million. They're running that through the PCA. The PCA does have some programs, and Bowser does too, but in this proposal, we're just running them all through Bowser.
Okay, thank you very much. No other questions? Mr. Botzik, welcome to the committee. Could you identify yourself, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, Gary Botzik for pinch hitting for Steve Morris, but representing Minnesota Environmental Partnership. But just one comment on the septics, and I'll allude to them again in my comments. But the $7.5 million, as I understand it, was in the governor's recommendation, but late. The Clean Water Council had already finished their work, so it's kind of been a kind of a dangling modifier and a number that establishes the need that's out there. We can throw 1.5 a year or 3.5 or 7.5, but the septic issue is substantial, as we well know. So I'll talk about that in a second. But, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'd like to thank you for this legacy bill, and I also would like to thank you for your work on the budget bill that as you go into conference committee. Well, the legacy bill, as you know, is designed and constitutionally dedicated to supplement or expand upon, to grow upon the base of efforts that's out there, whether it's septics, whether it's cleaning up our lakes and streams and waters. And every time we cut that base budget, we raise that risk of substituting these dollars for those dollars, and we don't want to see that. We want this to be the icing on the cake, not the cake itself, and that's going to be very difficult this year. We pledge to work with you as we go through the next month, hopefully, and resolve some kind of a Band-Aid to hold this together. And, Mr. Chairman, you folks have done a much better job on that than the other body, just off the record. I think you know that as well. We'll see how that works.
It is now on the record, and we certainly appreciate that.
Yeah.
And also, seriously, to your concern about the supplanting thing, I mean, that word is kind of a bad word. It's just all over the place, And I know Senator Kielash doesn't have any concerns about it, but I do. And
Mr. Chair, I think you used that word a lot last year.
It's being brought out, and I just have to remind you that you know, with the budget divisions, you know, basically trying to stay within that 15% cut all the way through here, and not treating anyone any different than the other as best we could, and hopefully that's going to eliminate some of that doubt. So, but go ahead, please.
And Mr. Chairman, we thank you for that, because that experience didn't happen quite the same in the other body. I want to talk about the Clean Water Council. I didn't know this amendment was going to be included until today. So, I think Morris would have been here if he knew that he had other commitments. But we have MEP would oppose that language, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Kalish, we appreciate your comments. You've said a lot of what I would say. We've worked hard on the current Clean Water Legacy Act that was passed in 2006, including the establishment of the council. As large and archaic as that is, it does work. I think it was Mark Twain that said booze is for social drinking, water is to go to war over. And that's true in cleaning up our waters. We've got problems, like Darrell just discussed, about septics. I don't think we want to have individuals or counties one by one coming in with a septic proposal to clean up septics in their township or their county or their city. We need a program. We need an institutional approach to water in Minnesota, a little different than the legacy. You can do conservation 40 acres at a time, 80 acres at a time, a section at a time. The institutionalization of water is much more profound, we think. There's also another factor on the water side, Mr. Chairman, that isn't prevalent on the legacy side, and that is the fact that there are partners. G4 and then G16 grew out of that. The partners are, and we're just one of those. Environment is only one of the four legs that support this chair. The business community, which we're warring with, this session on many environmental cutbacks. In our perspective, that we don't fight over water. We agree on water with the business community. We agree on water issues mainly with the ag community as well as local government. These four partners, these are four gorillas, if you will, that have worked together to put the act together since 2006 and continue to work on it. It's still a work in motion, but we think the council performs admirably, maybe confusing, I think is the word you used, Mr. Chairman, earlier. Yes, confusing, but water's a lot more complicated than conservation. And I guess I said that already, but water programs need to be institutionalized. We have to trust MPCA. We need to trust DNR, Bowser, the Department of Ag, PFA, and the Health Department as they administer these funds. You trust them to administer your budget, the budget money that you give them. They're on a short lease. They're back here, way more than they want to be in this room, but they are, because they have to defend every nickel, and they've got less nickels to deal with, as we know, and that's going to be very tough and very difficult for the next couple of years. But it's in our opinion, Mr. Chairman, the environmental community, speaking for MEP, that we shouldn't throw the council out with the bathwater here. It's performed well. It needs, if you're going to make the change, let's talk about it. Let's study it. The Lessard Council has had difficulties as members of the legislature were taken off of that council this year. So that one's still settling down after 3 years. And this Clean Water Council has got a longer longevity because it's based before the constitutional amendment. It was given more responsibility and more work after the constitutional amendment providing the 1/8 cent sales tax. So there, just like the Lessard Sam's Council is still settling, the council, or Clean Water Council, continues to work and provide opportunities for you to approve them or modify them. And you obviously, with your election certificates, reserve that right, and we're not here to stand in the way of that. So if we want to, we'll go out there and run against you, but I don't think you're going to see a lot of that. So good luck, and I'll stop there.
Thank you, Mr. Botsick. Just let me address a couple of those points with regards to the new commission, or excuse me, the new makeup. Again, this is a long-term water sustainability, and I understand that concept versus counties, cities, townships coming in with proposals. That's the real difference. However, those counties, townships, and cities now are going to be going to Bowser. They're going to be going to the DNR. They're going to be going to the League of Minnesota Cities. They're going to be going to their counterparts who actually are giving the proposals in larger quantities to the committee. That's not really going to change much. I'm not saying that we should have, and I certainly hope we don't have, create 100 or 200 proposals coming forth. no different than pheasants for or ducks unless use Ducks Unlimited for an example. You have 250 chapters in the state of Minnesota. We do not talk to 250 chapters. We talk to one. It's the state chapter. So to say that they're all going to come forward with proposals, I think, is inaccurate. I don't think they're doing that now, and I don't think they would do that in the future. So the settling down part, there was a question about, and I think that was addressed in the new bill. In fact, we did address that in some legislation here today with regards to the legislators being on there. That had to be addressed. Again, it was a work in progress. I mean, we all know that. So, but thank you for your testimony. I certainly appreciate what you're saying. Any questions, Mr. Butzik? I appreciate the pointing out the difference between here and across the street. We always like to hear that.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, there's that one reference to registered lobbyists. If we could take that out, too, we'd certainly maybe I'm overstating my case.
Sir, we're not into raising fees. However, that comes to mind when I think about that, actually. No.
Is there a fee? Is there a fee we charge?
That's Mr. Chairman, off the
I'm
record.
I'm sure there is. Linda, Senator Higgins seems to know there is. So, any questions?
Campaign finance part.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Any further testimony? Would MPCA, did they have somebody here that could address those questions with regards to the straight pipe? And I think we talked about this 2 weeks ago. I apologize for bringing that forward again, but there seems to be some questions on whether the straight pipes are actually straight or whether they make a stop before they come out the end. I guess that's the question here. So, and where those numbers came from. Thank you and welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rebecca Flood. I'm Assistant Commissioner of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And Senator Dams is correct that the estimate as of 2009 is 40,000 septic tanks are what are called straight pipes, which doesn't necessarily mean they don't have a tank, but they don't have a drain field. That's the difference between straight pipe system and one that is a compliant system, the absence of a drain field. About 23% of the population of the state of Minnesota rely on septic tanks for treatment of their wastewater. And Mr. Gerber was correct in the citation that equates to about a population equivalent of about 500,000 people. So, and we gather that information and data from county estimates. They report into us annually their estimates of straight pipe systems and other types of information they supply to us annually as a part of their county-required county programs. So those are estimates that we've published based on county data that's submitted to us. In addition to that, I would just mention to the committee that we have prepared a report and submitted it to the environment committees of both houses regarding our most recent information on septic tank systems, and I would be happy to provide that to all of the committee members should you desire that.
Senator Kulesh.
Mr. Chair, could you tell us how big the cuts are to monitoring these septic systems between the current budget proposal, I guess, out of the Senate, because that's the only one we have, and with the legacy fund dollars? Where is the enforcement or incentive numbers for the department to try to solve this problem?
The governor's budget includes $7.5 million that would include money to go directly to county programs to enhance their efforts, because in 2008 and then again in 2010, we amended those rules to make them completely up to date. So they are more complicated rules, so we are trying to get them additional funds to implement these additional requirements. In addition, there is also some money that's set aside for as a part of the governor's budget to provide incentives for counties to do things like conduct inventories to expedite the specific identification of these straight pipe systems and other failing systems.
Mr. Chair, just follow to follow up. Yeah. What I didn't get was how big are the cuts from last year's budget in not just legacy fund dollars, but total dollars to address this issue. The budget was cut as well, I know, and I'm just trying to figure out if we where we are, if we've got sufficient funds to go forward, or how much is the program going to be cut back?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if I could ask Myrna Halbach, our assistant CFO, to come up to address some of those additional questions, I would appreciate it.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name, please.
Mr. Chair, my name is Myrna Halbach. I'm the assistant chief financial officer for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And the proposed reduction for the SSTS work out of ours in the general fund is 15%, $56,000 out of $375,000.
In the general fund?
In the general fund. And there's nothing out of the environmental fund, which would be our other area.
Follow up.
She answered my question. So.
Thank you. Ms. Flood. Include to get a little my armor on these septic systems. 23% now. What were we 15 years ago? And included in, do you include in your 23% septic systems statewide? Do you include clusters? And maybe you want to explain what clusters are. I know what they are. I think I know what they are. There's several of them in one. Is that included in your estimates, or do you do each individual one included in a cluster system?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, septic systems cover a broad range of sizes of systems. Individual septic systems for households are generally under 2,500 gallons per day. Then we have systems that are mid-sized, and then we have that are 2,500 gallons per day up to 10,000 gallons per day, and then we have large systems, and those are all come under the rubric of septic systems, so it covers a wider range. So it could include what you've referred to as a cluster system, which serves a number of different homes or a resort or something like that.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? Members, any further testimony from the crowd?
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Kielash, Senator Kielash.
I'd like a roll call vote on this.
Actually, these are going to be held over for inclusion. Possible
oh, it is?
Inclusion, yes. All the heritage.
Together?
Excuse me?
All the heritage funds are going to go together?
That's correct.
Okay, I'm sorry,
that's
I didn't
right.
hear that.
Yes, I should have explained that before that. Yeah. That's going to... And that's something we're going to talk about. We're going to start actually on the 26th. We're going to start moving into all the presentations and the arts board and things like that.
So we still have time to make amendments.
Certainly
to
you do.
This
yes, you
things
do.
Like that.
Yes,
okay.
you do.
Good.
Okay. Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, didn't we send the Lassard Sams Council bill away?
No.
We kept it here?
Kept it in the back part of my office, actually. It's sitting on this. It's got dust on it, actually. It's been a while already.
Special spot for it.
So.
But that's the bottom drawer where I put what I consider really bad bills.
Really bad stuff?
Let them die.
I don't have any of those, so I haven't experienced that yet. Members, just so you know, this is not uncommon. The Heritage dollar, the Heritage funding has always gone, at least so far, in one bill with four different portions to it, and that's how we intend to proceed, as well as I think the House is going to do the same. So, with that, we'll be holding over Senate file. I'm sorry, I haven't got it in front of me.
657.
Senate file 657 will be held over for possible inclusion. Nothing else before the committee.